The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Save big money and start your spring project with help from Menards. We offer a huge selection of body plants, veggies, and herbs to plant at home and grow yourself. Right now, all 4.5-inch body plants are on sale through May 5th. Head to the Menards Garden Center to get your garden growing and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
How have you not seen that movie?
Exactly, keep saying that in my ears.
Right.
This is my life. They go, hey, have you seen this movie? And I go, no. And then they go higher pitch. It's
right.
Like 5 octaves higher than their normal voice. How have you not seen that movie?
Yes, right.
Exactly.
That's my whole life.
Yo, what's up? This is Chris Sims. Chris Sims, I'm Button, and this is not Siskel and Ebert next to me. That's for sure. It's Ahmed Farid. Even better. Thumbs up to that.
Even better.
Although
no
doubt.
They were pretty good.
They were kind of good, yeah.
They're
and
iconic.
They watch movies, so they have that advantage on you, at least in that department. But what's up? Chris Sims, I'm Button, presented by Under Armour. Hope everybody's good. Week 14, almost in the books. We still got a great game tonight with Rams-Cardinals that I'm excited about. We had a great day yesterday. The games were, I think there was a lot of, I don't want to say surprises, I guess surprises because of blowouts. And then we were treated to a few crazy finishes that I think were really cool. And some were, you know, cool throughout. Others were like, whoa, this team's dominating and how are they getting back? But nonetheless, never dull for excitement in the NFL.
There are storylines for every team, regardless of how the game went.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of games that, it was like blowout Sunday. And then some of those games, though, got close. It was like a handful of them got close.
Right.
Teams were able to hang on. It wasn't like the victor changed at all. But I think, are the better teams separating from the worst?
I think the last two weeks we're seeing that a little bit
but
more.
But I see some weaknesses in some of the good teams.
Yeah.
Like the Dallas Cowboys, a team that we were really high on a while ago. It's like offensively, they got some issues.
Yeah, they do. We're going to break into that too. And I hopefully can pinpoint a few things for you. Again, of course, haven't watched that film yet, but I've watched them pretty closely on a weekly basis. So we can hit that for sure. You know, we saw the Bucks and them kind of fizzle out as the game went on, right? That was interesting. Thing. The Bears jump out to a lead against the Packers.
Yep.
But I think we got a lot to talk about. One thing I do get, and I know you've heard me talk about this, is going to be a discussion later in our podcast, because I do have like people are like, well, why are there more blowouts this year in the NFL?
Mm.
And you know my answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it is?
I know what it is.
Yeah, aggressive. Aggressive, right. Because now everybody, when the game's 10-0, it's whoa, we might lose control of this. We're on our own 40 or our own 30-yard line. We got to go for it on 4th-and-1. And now they're down 17-0. And it just compounds itself to where, I don't know, again, in the old days, that would not happen.
Yeah.
It would not. And I'm
you would
all for
you would take your 7-point loss like a man. You wouldn't lose by 21.
Well, I would manage it to keep it to around the 7-point loss instead of just going, wait, I know the future. And I understand the next 3 quarters because I'm the Wizard of Oz over here. And I'm going to be able to figure out how the game's going to go and put it all down to this play. That makes no sense to me.
And again,
I know we're going to have some discussions about this as we go on. And you and I are on a little bit of the different sides of this.
A little bit, which is fun.
It
because
is fun.
I am a stan. I am a Chris Sims stan. Like when people attack you, whether they be Tua lovers or not,
right.
I will always back you up. But this is one of the rare instances where we have different opinions, which I think is good and healthy for our relationship. I think we need that every once in a while.
Definitely.
Like a little push and pull.
That's right. I don't need you jocking me all the time.
Just 98% of the time. All right, we'll get that 2%
occasional,
here today.
Occasional pushback.
All right, let's get into some of the big games here. We will end with we unfortunately have to lay some teams to rest today. Maybe fortunately for them and their fan bases. 4 teams officially eliminated.
Yep.
From the postseason.
Yep.
The Detroit Lions, my Detroit Lions being one of those. So the return of Requiem for a team. I've written little poems for four teams here.
I love it.
Your playoffs are done. You're not going, but you get a poem by Ahmed Fareed.
All right. How long does it take you to write these poems? Because, like, I mean, you didn't know you were doing this until last night.
So, no, I did them during when we were all in that room. You know, me, you, Breeze,
Oh, so you
Tirico.
Felt this coming on yesterday.
Pete texted me. He was like, hey, heads up. Yeah. These teams are bad, and they might be eliminated very soon. I was like, all right, thanks, Pete. Wow. And so I just started writing them because I was like, if it's not this week, it'll be next
week. It'll be next week. So
or the week after.
Right.
So okay. I could probably do about half the league right now. But actually, no, because there's still a lot of teams still in it, like the Atlanta Falcons, crazily enough. All right,
yes,
we'll get to them. We'll get to all that coming on.
Yep.
Let's start with the team that that won the Super Bowl last year. And this is kind of like the big comebacks that fell short.
Yeah.
This is what I was talking about. Pete has grouped them here together. We start with the Buccaneers. They hang on in overtime it took, which boggles the mind. If you just saw the first half of that game, you thought that the GOAT and Tom Brady and everyone were going to just roll the Bills. But no, Buffalo came back with Josh Allen, 33-27 in overtime. I know you want to talk about your good friend Josh Allen, who I think, was the best player on the field.
Thank you.
In the
game
yesterday. I mean, you can't watch that game and think anything other. But let's just start real quick with the last play in overtime here, because you got that great comeback by the Bills.
Yeah.
And then you Buccaneers have it in overtime.
Right.
And the final play, we broke it down on the Peacock show last night.
Right.
Breshad Perryman, who plays for the Bucs.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, he plays for the Bucs now. That's interesting. And he's catching a long touchdown to win it. You broke down this play. What'd you see from that final play in this great classic game?
Well, hey, the Bills are smart. They understand, like, when they play certain coverages, what the vulnerabilities are within that coverage, right? They're good that way. So they never, like, just go, we're going to play this coverage, and, man, if they call this play, we're screwed, right?
Yeah.
Now, they end up getting screwed on this play, but it wasn't because, like, the thought process was wrong. They just didn't execute it the right way. And, of course, the Bucs give you a lot to think about. And, really, they put Tremaine Edmonds, the middle linebacker, who's a phenomenal football player, in a tough spot. But, you know, on that play specifically, you know, it's man-to-man coverage by the Buffalo Bills. You got a bunch set to your left. It's three receivers. You know, Gronk is one of those three receivers over there to the left. And they're in, what we would call a bunch, where three guys are somewhat close to each other. Well, what happens a lot of the times in those kind of sets? You know, guys get picked, especially if you're playing man. They can't find ways to kind of weave everybody together, and now one guy gets caught in the traffic, and, whoa, I can't cover this guy on a shallow cross. Well, on the other side of the formation, so you got the three receivers to the left, you got Mike Evans to the right, on a tight split, what we would call. He's close to the tackle at the end of the line of scrimmage, which is usually a red light for a defense to go, oh, wait, here comes crossers. There's a bunch over here. There's a guy over here to cut down his time to come across as well. Here comes crossers. So they're playing man. McDermott, Leslie Frazier are smart to know that could be a pick play.
Yep.
It could be that. And they try to pass things off because it's not realistic to ask your guys to go, wait, we want you to run across the middle of the field and cover a guy that runs 4-4 and then weave through traffic and stay with him.
Right.
And like, that's not possible, right?
Yeah.
So they try to pass it off within that. Tremaine Edmonds is responsible for Perryman. He's the guy that's got to kind of pick him up, knowing that Perryman came from the outside of the bunch to the left, knowing that that corner is not going to be able to fight through the traffic and get there. And, in fact, the corner that's on Perryman, he stops because he goes, wait, here comes Mike Evans, and he's got the corner on the other side beat. I'm going to stop him so he can't do it because he's expecting Edmonds is going to pick up my guy. Edmonds looks at the receiver, gets caught back looking at Brady for a minute and follows his eyes, and then realizes, oh, no, I've lost track of my guy. And you could see, like, he looks at it, and he tries to take off running even before Brady throws the ball, but it's too late, gone, touchdown. Great play by the Bucs.
Yep.
You know, messing it up a little bit there by the Bills, who I got to give a lot of credit for their fight to come back in this one.
And Perryman said after the game that play was basically
designed to get
Mike Evans open. And
it
just happened to be that Perryman got open, and that's why Tom Brady is one of the best to ever do it.
No doubt.
He identified that immediately.
Yes.
No pause.
Right.
And threw it to Perryman, and the rest is history.
Usually
there.
The guy that's underneath, right? There's two crossers. The guy that's underneath is the one they're trying to go to because he can go – he knows and his teammate knows, hey, I'm coming, right? We're going to create a rub here and I'm going to come underneath you. But they set them up by almost running right at each other. So then he takes the little oh, I'm going to go under, and that's usually what sets the pickup, because now the DB who's following him at that last second when he comes underneath him runs into the other guy and you're wide open. But that did not happen, and Brady, like you said, great feel, instincts to kind of see that pop open.
I can already hear Bills fans saying that that should never have even happened because of a couple calls that happened before that. And we'll get into, you know, we have talked about the officiating a little bit here in the past. And I know there are some Bills fans on Twitter, and I was reading the tweets talking about the potential pass interference on Stephon Diggs in the fourth quarter. Yeah. You didn't think it was pass interference,
I didn't think it was horrible. I did not. You know, again, you know me. I'm one to
Would have been a game-winning touchdown if they can, or put him at the one-yard line and then get it. You know, they would have won in regulation.
I know.
If they
now, this, where I struggle with those, and again, I'd like to watch it on film a little too so I could really look at it, is just that, you know, first off, when I see those plays a lot of the times, the offense creates the initial contact. It's like, so there's Diggs, and he knows he's going to go run and then put on the brakes. So he gets his hands on the guy early so he can kind of push the guy upfield. And then that's where Carlton Davis, like, he's not an idiot. He goes, well, I think I know what's coming. So he starts to kind of hold and hand wrestle as well. Mm-hmm. Now, we're accustomed, again, the issue is this. Probably 99 out of 100 times in the first three quarters, the first three and a half quarters, it gets called pass interference. And that's where I think people go, wait, this was interference all game, but now here we are in a crucial part, it's not. And to me, that's the inconsistency that's going on in the reffing in the NFL right now. But I don't really have an issue with that one. I don't. And
did you have more of an issue with the one that Mike Evans actually got in overtime? Underthrown ball, he's coming back to the
ball. I don't like those,
I hate those. Now I hate those.
Now, a little goes into some...
They always get called. I think that needs to change.
I'm with you, too. Well, again, too much bad offense is being rewarded in football right now. Oh, the protection was bad. Nobody's open. The quarterback held the ball. And, oh, he got hit too hard. Oh, free first down. Oh, he threw the ball into quadruple coverage. It was a horrible decision. And he underthrew the fucking ball. And everybody ran into each other because everybody has a right to the ball. Oh, pass interference on the defense. What? I mean, offensive pass interference never gets called. And to your point, yes, I don't like that. Now, what teams got to change, and some of the good teams are changing this, is you got to stop, like, turning into the receiver to stop those plays, right? They have no sight on the football.
But if you're running and you're trying to keep up with the receiver, you are facing the receiver. And if that ball is thrown well, you're in a better spot than, you know, if that ball's underthrown, it's like, it's almost like the defensive player is not given the right for where their body currently is. It's like if you're standing in between
the ball. He has a right to that spot.
The receiver's trying to go through the defender.
He has a right to that
spot.
It's like
the dude's standing
right
there.
But he also cannot impede the receiver's ability to go catch the football. And that's where, okay, he has a right to the spot. And now that's where I go, he's got to turn his head. See, this became a thing in the NFL in the last 10 or 15 years. When I was growing up or watching my dad play, the DBs ran down the field and they track the ball like the wide receiver. They didn't go, I'm just going to look at the receiver and wait till he puts his hands up and then try to knock the ball out that way. That's what's leading to a lot of those interceptions on the underthrown balls or the jump balls or whatever else. And I wish they'd change that. And you're seeing some of the better defenses and DBs are changing that. You know, because, well, why? I mean, you got feel. He's right there. He's on your left hand, left shoulder. You got to feel for him. Turn around. Play the ball once you get downfield. But, yeah, that was – I don't like that. But I understand them calling it. And you know me. I'm not the one that kind of like favors offense here in this kind of discussion.
No.
I think they overdo it with pass interference. I think they could call offensive pass interference a whole lot more than they actually do. And, yeah, you are – and to what Brady has always said, you're rewarding really a bad throw and a bad play. But I also would say Buffalo, turn around and play the ball.
So that last throw from Tom Brady was a good play and a good throw. His 700th career touchdown, including playoffs.
It's amazing.
I don't know what happened with the ball. I haven't heard the story
on
that.
They went and got it, like, right away.
Same thing? Yes. Oh, they were there.
No, they were there. Like, the ball boy or whoever was all over it. I read an article this morning, and it was on their mind, their radar, they went and got it away. So, there you go.
Oh, here it is.
There you
go.
See? I told
you. Wow.
I read a story this morning about it, so they weren't going to let this one go. And
it's like the ball boy there's like tackling Brady. Like at the 1 yard, no, he's in the end zone here. That would have been funny if they tackle him like right after he crosses.
Give us that ball.
Like five ball boys come and tackle him and take the ball away from him. What if Perryman wanted to keep that ball? It was a significant touchdown for him.
Yeah, you're right.
If he was just like, no, this
is
mine.
I know.
I'm going to keep this one.
You're right. He should be like,
give me Bitcoin.
Yeah, he's like, Brady, give me $100,000. Screw you. I'm keeping this.
I haven't been in the league all that much here lately.
Right.
Okay, so that was, first half was great for Tampa. I mean, they're up 24-3 at halftime. And then the second half was the Josh Allen show. We got Derek Rudolph saying, damn, okay, Josh Allen is a warrior.
Right.
I think we have his first half versus second half numbers here. I mean, first half, I don't know. I think I saw this somewhere, Pete, and maybe you can check. I don't think a running back ran the ball in the first half. I know they had very few. First time in three decades of running. They had four rushes, but that was all Josh Allen. Is that what happened there? Or, yeah, that's what Pete's saying. So I was like, it is all Josh Allen. And in the second half, it was all Josh Allen, and he put the team on his back.
Hey, listen, Brady's going to win MVP probably. You can't sit there and watch that game and tell me that guy Brady's better than that guy right there. I don't care. That's where it's wrong with the MVP conversation right now a little bit in football. We just, who's the quarterback on the best team? Oh, okay, he wins MVP. And I get it. Like, I understand it, and Brady deserves it from that way. I don't want the guidelines to be broken just this year out of nowhere. But come on. I mean, you said it. Everybody's been hearing me say it for the last 5-6 weeks because it's the Josh Allen show. That's what it is up in Buffalo. They were the Buccaneers completely – and the first half stats where we show they're kind of underwhelming for Allen, it doesn't matter. You could call God, the Incredible Hulk, you know, I don't care, Jesus, whoever else you want to call, Superman. That wasn't going to change. They had no chance. I mean, the Buccaneers' defense overwhelmed the offensive line for the Buffalo Bills. There was nothing there to be had. And then the same thing on the other side of the ball, Ahmed. I mean, the Bucs' offense overwhelmed the Bills' defense in every area. You know, the Bills, again, they're not real big, right? So they really get compromised when it's a big offensive line like Tampa has. It's Leonard Fournette. And then that, therefore, they have to put too many people into, we got to get around the line of scrimmage and try to stop that because we don't have enough big people that can kind of just hold their ground. So we need a lot of people up there to just shoot gaps and do that. And Tampa just absolutely did whatever they wanted against Buffalo in the first half. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, hey, you know what happens in the second half? One team starts to get a little conservative, right? The pass rush, this is one thing you see in the NFL, and this is where depth of pass rush really matters in football, especially in a game where you get up a little bit against a great quarterback. They die out as the game goes on. So they lost their ability to go 4-4, 4-5 around the edge all game long because, damn it, how many times can you rush the passer before you start to lose gas, let alone you're chasing this fucking guy all over the field too. So they die out, and that plays into the Bills and Josh Allen's hands, and they mount this furious comeback with him with just, you know, first off, hey, great throws, great job getting out of sacks, and then his running ability, again, it's as good as anybody in football, not named Lamar Jackson or Kyler Murray. After that, Josh Allen's the best running quarterback in football. He's a freak show, absolute freak show. I feel for him because it's a lot on him right now. I really do. But to me, I think the big thing what I would say is the Buccaneers, this is why them or the Cardinals are the best team in football. You could just we saw in the first half what they are when they're playing their best. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to stop. It really is. The offense has everything. I mean, everything. We know it has weapons. Now you got Brady to get you in the right play if something messes up. The scheme delivers you everything, right? I mean,
the scheme's getting better.
I do. Yeah, the scheme is a great scheme because they really have a little of everything. I mean, how many weeks have we come in here? And one week, he throws every play. This week, they did it through the run. Yesterday, you heard me yelling in the first half. How many fucking screen passes do they have? I mean, it was tight end screen, receiver screen, receiver screen, tight end screen, which was great against the Bills who were putting all these people at the line of scrimmage. You get the ball out there. You know, you get some people, and all of a sudden, you got your receiver on the edge with limited people because they're so packed in there to stop the run, right? So they have answers, a playbook for everything, the talent to go along with it. And I just think, yeah, of course, when they're playing their best, they're arguably the best team in football. But I do want to give Buffalo a lot of credit for hanging in there and staying in there. I really think, listen, in a lot of ways, sometimes in the modern-day NFL, when you're playing a quarterback like Josh Allen, mm-hmm. right, and you get up like 24-0 or 24-3, it's almost a bad thing. Like, I feel like the Bucs would have won more convincingly if the Bills kind of hung around a little early on for the game. And then the Bucs would have just worn them down and won the football game. But you take your foot off the gas pedal. You become a little shy with, I don't want to call this play an offense. Let's not give them a chance to make a play or do something. I don't want to call this defense and let Josh Allen just one play 80-yard touchdown to Diggs, right? So you start to be a little conservative and manage the game. And then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, they're rolling now, and we can't really reaccelerate or step on the gas here to get going again.
Yo, Coach, how do we stop a rolling Josh Allen?
Exactly, and
you
that's
can't.
What happened.
Why'd we do this?
Yeah, well, and that's
Why'd
what
we
happened.
Let this happen?
But I feel like, you know, this year we've seen games like this a lot where we go, this team's up 20 points, and here we are. What? It's 4 minutes left in the game, and it's coming down to the very end. And I think, you know, the way I explained it is kind of what happens a little bit.
So where does this leave the Bills now? Because the playoff odds, I think we have them week by week here.
I know. And damn, I'm rooting for the Bills.
Entering week 13 to make the playoffs was 88%. They had a better than 50% chance to win the AFC East. Now they're 7-6. They still have a better than not chance to make the playoffs, 66%. Yeah. But their chance to win the AFC East is down to 22%. But they're a bubble team now. I mean, they are a bubble team.
That's where they're
going to
be.
And they don't have a lot of great – they've been in some good games. They don't have a lot of great wins. You think they're a bubble team?
I think they're a bubble
legit
team.
Bubble
they're
team.
A wild card team. I would be surprised if they beat New England in a few weeks. But the one thing they got going for them – and listen, I think they're a playoff team, and I think they are one of the seven best teams in the AFC. And I also think they'll be dangerous in the playoffs with certain matchups. They will. You know, their defense is still good, and it matches up with some offenses in the AFC really well, like we've talked about. It's the kind of the big overpowering offense that they've had to deal with, right, in their last 4 weeks of games. They've had the Colts, the Patriots, and the Bucks, and that's a tough matchup for them. It is, but the fact that they got the Panthers, the Patriots, the Falcons, the Jets, I'm not going to sit here and just go, oh, yeah, these are wins. But, you know, you know what I'm saying. But to me, it looks like a 3-1 finish. That should happen in Buffalo. You know, we'll see how Josh Allen's ankle is. It's hard, though.
Yeah.
You know, this is what I tried to say to people 6-7 weeks ago. It's hard to just go, wait, one side of the ball is just one guy doing amazing things with Stephon Diggs, and then there's not really a whole lot else that makes a defense go, oh, no, we got to worry about this guy or this part of the scheme. There's nothing there, and that's where Josh Allen is absolutely fucking amazing. I'm going to still say they make the playoffs, Ahmed. I am. I've been saying all along I thought it would be – right now we got New England, Tennessee, Kansas City, Baltimore, Chargers, Colts, Buffalo. I really thought this would be the seven, except I thought the Chargers – I thought the Chargers would supplant the Colts would supplant the Chargers, and we might see Cleveland in there at one point. And I'm not giving up on Cleveland yet either, but either way, I like the seven teams that are in right now.
There are 5-7-6 teams in the AFC. Buffalo is the seven seed. They're one of those five teams. Also one of those five teams, the Cincinnati Bengals,
Boom.
Who go down in overtime. Another one of those furious comebacks. Looks like the 49ers are going to roll to a somewhat easy victory. But then here come Joe Burrow. Here comes Ja'Marr Chase. Two late touchdowns. They force overtime. Both these teams, the 49ers and Bengals, I want them in the playoffs.
I do, too.
I think they're fun teams
to watch.
They're
playoff teams. Yeah.
I think they're fun teams to watch.
Right.
Let's start with a team that won here, though, because they got a tight end who's playing as well as a playmaker, as any playmaker in the NFL right now. George Kittle's gone over 150 yards the last two games. When he is like this, I mean, are there many other players in the league who are as unstoppable as George Kittle? And then you got Deebo Samuel. And so it's like you do have multiple playmakers and a good defense for the 49ers. Why can't they be?
Well, that's
one
why
of the top teams
I'm with
here?
You. That's why their health is paramount. Like, I think Deebo, he must have, as the game went on yesterday, I felt like we saw him less and less. I wonder if his groin acted up a little bit or they were being careful with him. But, you know, Kittle's special to what you're talking about. There's no doubt. I mean, come on, it's one of the most physically gifted tight ends in football, if not at the very top. You know, he's great blocker. And then what's the big thing that, you know, accentuates it even more, right? I mean, we talked about it a little last night. I know I'm putting you on the spot. It's Shanahan. Shanahan's ability to get his stars the ball, to me, is second to none. It's just amazing. Oh, Kittle's not in here? We'll fucking find the 90 ways to give Deebo Samuel the ball. Oh, Deebo's out the last 2 weeks? We'll find 90 ways to get Kittle the ball. Right? I mean, that's Deebo didn't play in Seattle last week. Of course, he didn't practice much this week. He was kind of a game-time decision. But, yeah, that coupled with, you know, Shanahan, and you have to defend the run, he just plays them so well off of each other. And then Kittle, of course, even in the drop-back pass game is really good. This game was even. I looked at these two teams as the day went on, and I went, really, these teams are very even.
Yes.
I really looked at it that way. It's just one team made some crucial mistakes, really, that kind of swayed the game to a 20-6 favor for the 49ers. And, of course, that was the muff punts. You know, the two buff punts by Phillips cost the Bengals 10 points, gave short fields to the 49ers. And that, to me, was the biggest difference in the game. But I looked at it as being very even, certainly. And it's the second week in a row where the Bengals have just messed up a little bit in some big moments. And that's why they lost the Chargers, why they lost yesterday. I do want to give Garoppolo some credit. You know, he's playing. Last week he had two bad interceptions. They haven't had a great run game the last 2 weeks. He played pretty good yesterday. Mm-hmm. He made a lot of tight throws in the middle of the field and even made one or two big throws outside the numbers, which you never see. But either way, I think, yes, I'm with you in the fact that if either one of these teams get in, like, I'm not picking it, but would I go, oh, my gosh, the Bengals and the 49ers got to the NFC or AFC championship game? I don't think it's a crazy thought. You know, again, the Niners defense is a top 10 defense. Bengals are in the top half of the league, and we know they both have explosive offensive playmakers. It was a fun game to watch. It really was.
Yeah, 49ers right now are the sixth seed in the NFC at 7-6. They're full game up on a bunch of 6-7 teams in the NFC. And I remember it was just like 3 or 4 weeks ago, there was a debate and a conversation on 49ers Twitter about, you know, should we just play Trey? Is this season a lost cause?
Yeah,
do
no.
we just play Trey
no.
Lance and build for the future? The future is now in San Francisco,
That's
and they're
right.
a playoff team, and they look like they could give a whole lot of teams a whole lot of problems. The Bengals could do that, too,
yes.
if they get in. And there were those two late touchdowns. We got Joe Burrow in the first half, Joe Burrow in the second half.
Yeah.
You know, Cincinnati actually outgained the 49ers
right.
in the first half of this game. You
right.
mentioned the two muff punts. They also had Cincinnati 11-play drive and a 12-play drive in the first half. Both of those ended in field goals,
yep.
so they were not scoring touchdowns.
Yep.
So they were pretty able to consistently move the ball, whether it be through the air with Joe Burrow or just through field position.
Yeah.
But in the second half, he goes off and this is why you liked him coming out. It just seems like he doesn't have the strongest arm, but he's got this certain ability and this moxie and this leadership
yeah.
and this edge to bring his team back. Like, you never count out Joe Burrow.
No doubt. Well, their offense has everything. That's the one thing. So they can kind of adjust to whatever it is. Oh, wait, they're playing this. So let's go to this part of our playbook. You know, I really like their offense. Yeah, they can run the ball. They have boots and play actions. They have a very good drop back pass game, and they know how to dial up a shot down the field every now and then. And he's an aggressive thinker and thrower, Burrow. So that, and the second half, you know, you heard me yelling a little bit yesterday. I'm going, I don't even know the names of the 49ers corners. Would we throw outside there? And they started to do that a little bit more. He found T. Higgins over the middle for a bunch of big plays. But, yeah, they hung in there. And I was worried about whether Burrow might, you know, get hit too much, which bordered on that for, at times in the game. But, yeah, his arm has gotten stronger. He's got incredible feel. I love watching Joe Burrow. I really do. I think he's an amazing quarterback. He's already a superstar in my mind. And yeah, he just hangs in there. And again, he's that guy again that has that gift because everybody sees what he does on a daily basis to where, you know, I know we've hit this before. When you have that kind of quarterback, the team is always, their chest can be puffed out. Oh, we're going to win today. We got that guy. You know, we're down 20-6. Mm-hmm. No big deal. Let's keep playing. We got that guy. And that's what Burrow does, and he's Joe Cool that way. They're a young team again. They're still getting used to being good, battle-tested. And we've seen in a few games this year, they've messed it up. You know, I would say last week they messed it up. Yesterday they messed it up to a degree. I'm not saying they would have won the Bears game earlier this year, you know, and I think they're getting used to kind of being one of those teams that's a little bit marked because of their talent, but good win for the 49ers nonetheless. And I'm with you. I think they're both playoff teams.
Yeah, I really do. The question is, how is Cincinnati going to get in here, right? Because they're currently the 9 seed. They got Cleveland ahead of them on tie breaks right now. But who knows? Perhaps it's going to be the Baltimore Ravens that drop out.
Oh, I know. Well, forget it. It's okay.
What? No.
Well, I added, like,
I can't forget it. Now, you say
punts,
that now. You
the
said,
muff
yeah.
punts, okay, and I do want to do this. I want to make sure I get this, all
Let's
right?
Let's get this in.
Because
I had a perfect segue. It was going to be a thing of beauty. It was a thing of beauty. Pete knows it. We all know it. It was there, but we do want to get in this last point.
I know. It's probably not even that good either. 10-6.
Uh-huh.
Muff a punt. Going to get off the field. Ball's rolling. Now it's third down. They're going to get off the field. Ball's rolling around. Von Bell picks the ball up. It's an incomplete pass. And he's running, and he's kind of joking, and he points at a guy. They give him a taunting penalty. Mm. They give the 49ers the ball. They score the touchdown a few plays later. He throws a touchdown pass to George Kittle. That, to me, was the turning point, key point of the game. At the very least, they should have been down 13-6 there with the ball and some time to maybe go get their own field goal. And again, modern day NFL, I mean, come on, you got to know you can't point at somebody's face at this point. Come on, yeah. It's week 14. And I like Von Bell. All right, now I'm really sorry. Start your amazing segue once again. No, speaking of the Baltimore Ravens.
When there's a chance to talk about the taunting penalties, we do have to do that.
And it was a major point. I'm sorry. It was a major point in the game. I'm sorry. And I did not mean to cut you off because you're the master of the segment.
All right, now we got to make a hard right turn. All right, let's change the subject completely to the Baltimore Ravens here. No, they're connected because you got the Bengals in it with the Browns, and you got the Ravens there too. And this was another one of those games where you didn't know what was going to happen. You thought you did with the Cleveland Browns with a big lead, but then Baltimore comes back without Lamar Jackson, yep, which we'll talk about. But there are a couple things that happened in this game that got Chris out of his seat and angry. Once again, it's not just the officials that can do that to Chris. It can also be coaches, play calling, and sometimes what he says is too aggressive, yeah, play calling. And so
set it up here.
Which one? I want to know, which one were you more mad about? Were you more mad about John Harbaugh going for two down 15 once they scored that touchdown to make it a 9-point game?
Right, right.
Or were you more mad by the Cleveland Browns defense when they're playing on that fourth down late in the game when they converted at the 30-yard catch to
Bateman.
Bateman, yeah, right. That's right. Yeah.
You're down two scores.
Which one made you more mad?
Bleed the fucking clock. Now you're going to go, hey, take a shot and get 30 yards right here so you can maybe score a touchdown and kick the onside kick and maybe beat us. I mean, Cleveland and defense, I just don't know what to say. They're all over the place.
They both made you mad. But
the two-point conversion probably made me mad.
Okay, so let's get into that. Yeah. So they were down, they're down 15. You're going to need a two-point conversion at some point.
24-9, right.
24-9. Right. So then they score the touchdown.
Murray up the middle.
And then so you're like, all right, we're down 9.
Right.
And there's about, 8 minutes left in the game?
8:56 left when they scored that.
All right, we're going to go for two at some point, whether it's this touchdown or next touchdown.
Right.
He elects to go for two right then.
Right.
So before you say anything, they didn't get it, by the way.
Yeah.
Before you say anything, let's hear John Harbaugh give his answer why he did that.
Right. Well, it's pretty much a standard kind of really not a non-decision. You do it at that point in time because you're going to have to win a two-point conversion. So you understand if you get it or don't get it early where you're at going from there, how many possessions you're going to need, and what you're going to have to do. If you wait till the last two-point conversion and you don't get it, the game's over. You've lost. So you try it early. We're in a 7-point game. We know where we stand. We don't get it. We're in a 9-point game, and we know that we need two possessions.
I don't like this. So what I was, you know where you stand too if you get the 2-point conversion. That's where we gloss over that. If you get the 2-point or just kick the extra point, you know where you stand still. So you can't say that because you're down by 8.
No,
he can't
say that. No, he can't say that because what he's saying is that if you kick right there and you're down by 8 and then you score right with 30 seconds to go in the game or whatever and you go for 2 and miss it, crap. Game's over. You don't have any time now to do an onside kick. And so if you know earlier that you're going to need to score and then kick a field goal, then you're going to try to score as quickly as you can, knowing that you need as much time still on the clock to get another possession and go.
But they're
going to
score
goal
as quickly as they can when they're down by 8.
Not necessarily, because you don't necessarily want to leave time on the clock for Cleveland to go down score at the end of the game.
See, to me, there's still too much predicting of the future there. Yeah. Like you know how it's going to unfold. But you do know
you need a 2-point at some point.
Oh, I got you. But to me, what I will always go back to is where, and again, Cleveland dropped the ball. We know that. And again, Baltimore got a chance. But I'm always a believer in make the game a one-score game. That makes the other team feel the pressure of the one-score game and change the way they call the game, right?
That's your big point, is that you think you would rather play the Cleveland Browns and have them only be up 8 points than them to have the comfort of being up 9 points.
To me, again, a really good offensive coordinator or a team, and again, I'm not putting Stefanski in that category quite yet, okay? Mm-hmm. You know that. Like, they would go Shanahan and McVay and McDaniels, they'd go, we're up 2 scores. You know, first down, I might go play action pass here. Let's get a big chunk of yards, get a first down. You take the pressure off of them of going, oh, man, they're only down 1 score. We want to take some time off the clock. We don't want to do anything that way and mess up the game and give them a chance. Let's just be conservative. You, in my opinion, you take pressure off the team now that's up by 9. you give them a little bit more leeway to be aggressive, maybe draw up a play or do something that they are not going to do if it's a one-score game because they're going to be worried about making that mistake. That would be my assessment, and being around the NFL a little bit and that pressure there. To me, yes.
But,
now,
but
again,
can't you see the opposite, though? Can't you see a team being up two scores playing very conservative as well, just being like, all right, we're up two scores, let's not do anything to mess this up? And I think ultimately you want
the
other team to play
conservative. Side of it. I guess there is that side of it, yes. I mean, there is. I guess I just think there's more value in making the other team continue to manage the game under the pressure of the one-score game over the fact that now it's a two-score game. And, hey, yeah, we got a little leeway. Now, again, I know it didn't work out that way, but to me, the way they did it, you know, again, a whole bunch of other things percentage-wise have to happen that you can't even, like, I don't know, you can't quantify, in my opinion.
You don't know. There's a lot of uncertainty. And I think a lot of this, too, in analytics is really on the edges. We're talking 3, 4, 5% here.
Yeah.
John's talking about knowing beforehand a little bit sooner what you have to do at the end of a game. And so, I mean, I get all that stuff. And throughout this whole conversation, too, oftentimes we don't talk about the fact that they could have gotten the two-point conversion there, and that would have been a boost to them because then they're down seven. Then you know you only need a extra point to tie, or who knows? Maybe you can try to win it at the end of regulation. So I think, you know, there's a loss aversion to the fan. It's like we always talk about it when it doesn't work, and I think sometimes when it does work, we're just like, oh, all right, they got lucky. It worked out there. You feel the pain of
right,
not getting the fourth down or the two-point conversion more than you feel the joy of actually getting it, which is, I think, why we talk about it and question it so
no
much.
I know, you know, I there's more I want to say here, but there's so much to
there's a lot in
unpack.
This game, so I think that I think that's reasonable.
I think it's reasonable. I don't like, though, the of, you know, what you need to get again. So you're down by eight, right? Okay, so wait, but Cleveland goes three and out, right?
Are they going to try to score as quickly as the Ravens going to try to score as quickly as they can if they're,
I don't know, but they
eight.
Got the ball back. They got the ball with 7:20 left.
Yeah.
So you're looking still, you're going to get two possessions.
No, that's true.
Right. You're going to have two possessions. I mean, if you score a touchdown and miss it, you're still going to have another, and you don't get the 2-point conversion, you're still going to have another chance to get the ball. I know that's where I don't like it, I guess. That's where I look at it that way. But I guess it's an interesting discussion. I guess the numbers don't necessarily agree with me that way either.
The main point is that you want all the information as early, and if you know that you got to go for, you know, two at some point, might as well go for it early and just figure it out from there on out. So that's their philosophy.
Right.
Now what they have to figure out is life after Lamar. We don't know. We're going to know at some point today. You might know when you're listening to this podcast.
Yeah, right.
The severity of the injury. It wasn't great that he had to get carted off the field. Maybe that was just more of a precaution.
I think so.
Tyler Huntley comes in. He looks okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Did some really
obviously
good things.
They came back and almost won this game. But, you know, we don't know, so it's hard to say. But let's just say they don't have him or he's not 100% for a week or two. How much does that hurt their playoff chances? They're 8-5 right now in the 4 seed.
Yeah. I mean, Baltimore is. You know, I know you and I have had a discussion where we've talked. I don't really know how good they are. I don't.
Even with Lamar.
They're tough. You know, I know they're going to fight. Their game planning is real good on both sides of the ball. But, yeah, it certainly hurts their chances if there's no Lamar here over the next few weeks. And, again, Tyler Huntley did some really good things. There's no doubt about that. You know, made some great throws. You know, I think a little bit they got Baltimore in a position where we just talked about with Tampa. I mean, the Browns in a position we just talked about with Tampa where it's like, whoa, we're winning. Wait, we got to let's take our foot off the gas pedal. Let's be a little conservative, see if we can get them to bleed the clock. And all of a sudden it's hard to reaccelerate once again. But, yeah, I mean, they got the Packers, the Bengals, the Rams, the Steelers. Tyler Huntley's good. He's not Lamar Jackson, though. He's not. And Lamar hasn't been playing his best. I understand that. And I think they need him more now than ever because, yeah, the Packers and Bengals and Rams are going to be able to move the ball in that defense. You need his playmaking ability. And to me, that's where, you know, again, you heard me say this last night. The Ravens are a running football team. You know, they can pass the ball and be dangerous and beat you that way, but they're not running the ball the way they're capable of running the ball, what we've seen the last 3 or 4 years. And you know, they're not built to be able to just carve you up in the pass game. That's not what they are. You know, did you like my analogy I used last night when I was like,
what was it?
Well, I was like, Well, why don't the Chiefs just dominate in the run game? Why don't the Chiefs just, the offense isn't working? Why don't they just dominate? The pass game's not working. How come they're not one of the best run teams and they just can't take over that way? Why? Because they're built to throw the ball. You can't just change and do that. So the Ravens are, yeah, in a tough spot there. They're not necessarily built to throw the ball. They're better than in years past. But, yeah, I do think they're going to be hurt without Lamar. I do. You know, I don't think Tyler Huntley, he's good. I don't think he's been able to consistently make plays, throws, score touchdowns the way Lamar Jackson can.
Worst case scenario.
Yeah.
We don't know right now.
Right.
Worst case scenario, he's out for the rest of the year, Lamar.
Right.
Does Baltimore make the playoffs?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no. You know, again, I'm not a believer in Baltimore. I think you've kind of heard me say that all year long.
They got a little bit of a cushion, but not that much of a cushion.
Not that much. Not with this schedule,
too. A lot of seven-win teams out there.
Yeah, not with this schedule. And then you got, you know, Green Bay at home, whom we know is real good. The Bengals, who already put a butt-whooping on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Rams at home, who are going to score points, too. You know, I think those are going to be games where, yeah, you're not going to be able to sit there and go, wait, we're going to steal. We might be able to win this 20-17. I don't think so. I think those are games where you're going to probably have to score 28, maybe 30 in at least two or three of them. And that's where I think they miss Lamar.
And the Steelers, they're 6-6-1, even though you've written them off.
No chance.
And you've said no chance.
No, that was another game. Same thing, like in that game. Same type of game. I mean, it's just we're dominating. We're whooping their ass. Let's back off a little bit, try to bleed the clock, and all of a sudden, you know, oh, we made a mistake or two, and all of a sudden, shit, they're driving down the field to score. Yeah. But
Chris is going, do you know I have to kiss feet if the Steelers make the playoffs, Vikings? Do you realize that?
I know, like, step your game up. But, I mean, some of some of the decisions, the clock management, all were issues in that one. I'll say this just to end the NFC, AFC North conversation. I still think the Bengals and the Browns are the two most physically talented teams in the division at this point. I do. I think they're the two best teams when they play their best football. You know, again, they're just not as battle-tested and as maybe polished as
overall
the Ravens are.
Overall roster.
Wow. I like those two rosters the most. And if they can just get out of their way and not mess things up a little bit, I think they're both playoff-quality football teams.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Gold for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this!
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. This summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
Well, you got a couple real good players on the defensive side that stood out on Sunday. One was Myles Garrett with the strip sack, fumble recovery, touchdown on Tyler Huntley. You also had a guy by the name of Micah Parsons who had a huge game, and that gets us to Cowboys against Washington, another game that the Cowboys looked like they were easily going to win, but Washington did come back. This one comes from Super Santos 22. He says, some call him the defensive rookie of the year. Some call him the defensive player of the year. But we say, damn okay, Micah
Parsons. I like
Parsons.
It. That's great, Super Santos 22.
And we had this debate because PointsBet has it right now as Micah Parsons and Myles Garrett neck and neck for the defensive player of the year with T.J. Watt, the guy that actually leads in sacks
right now.
is number three. But you give the edge to Micah Parsons right now.
I would. I mean, you know, again, I'm not trying to point, pat myself in the back, but I feel like as in the last 3 or 4 weeks, I've been trying to say this a lot. Forget rookie, defensive rookie of the year. He's already won that. Send him the award. That's over. He's in the defensive player of the year MVP conversation, in my opinion. Again, there's just people don't do what he's doing. Oh, whoa, look at this guy play middle linebacker. He's one of the best middle linebackers in football. Look at him run around the field, fill holes, sideline to sideline. Hey, we got some injuries to DN. Can you go to DN? Oh, whoa, holy shit. He's one of the best pass rushers in football. Can't block him one-on-one. Can set the edge in the run game. Mm-hmm. I mean, creates pressure all the time.
The fact that they felt okay doing that to a rookie who might be overwhelmed. You know, rookies are overwhelmed perhaps first time in the NFL.
Right.
And he didn't even play his last year at Penn State, right?
No, I mean, so he sat out because of COVID.
So it's like he didn't play last year. Right. He's a rookie. To have the faith to move him around, I mean, that's abnormal that they would give that faith to a rookie,
right? I think it's a great point by you. It is, because it just is the mental, you know, gymnastics of, again, I know it's defense and a lot of people just think, well, they just got to go get the football. No, they got rules and things they got to do and think about. And his ability to be instinctive but also know the rules. And you saw it a little bit in the training Hard Knocks on HBO. He was, I mean, really into the X's and O's and what you should do that way. But, yeah, I think it speaks to really what you see with great players, you know, 99 out of 100 times. Yes, they're physically extremely gifted, but most of them have a mental aspect that's special too. As much as we think Deion Sanders and Randy Moss were just out there, just, whoa, they're fast. Like, Randy Moss is one of the smartest football people I was ever around in the NFL. Deion Sanders is the same type of thing from people I've talked to. They understand what the other team's trying to do. They study their opponents, whether it's, you know, understanding a DB and how he covers or a receiver and how he runs routes. And Micah Parsons looks like he has that total package. And you heard me say last night, to me, he's like, I haven't seen anybody with this type of skill set. I'm not going to say he's him yet, but I have not seen anybody with this type of skill set since Lawrence Taylor. I just will say that. Where you could just go, whoa, we can play him off the ball and he's amazing, and we can play him at the end of the line of scrimmage and he can whoop the crap out of offensive tackles. That's where it's rare. And right now, he leading the charge, and the Dallas defense is playing ball right now, and they're healthy. And to me, they've jumped out more than anything the last 2 weeks. You know, even though I know the offense has a few plays, the offense is somewhat as of late and doesn't seem to have a great rhythm about it.
Yeah, I want to get into that offense here in a second, but do you want to tell people about PointsBet and how they can get some free money here too, with maybe $125 that they can just give?
Well, I mean, I don't know. When I hear free money, I'm in. You get free money? Yes, sign me up, please.
And then I go, wait, nothing's free. Wait, what's going on here?
Yeah, this is actually free. It's actually free. There's no doubt. All right. And if you're in an eligible state, PointsBet has an exclusive sign up offer for Unbutton listeners that you can't miss. All right. You listen to this podcast and you get a can't miss offer. All right. Download the PointsBet app. Use code Unbutton to sign up. Bet $1 on any NFL game and get $125 in free bets if a point is scored.
So if a point is scored, you don't even need to pick the winner. You bet a buck. You go, I think
as long as you don't pick like the Texans, some points going to get scored.
But whoever they're playing, though, they're going to score.
They're going to score. You're right.
So it's like doesn't even matter.
It doesn't even matter. So, all right. You like that? Ahmed explained it. I explained it. And now listen to this. Don't just bet this football season. Live your bet life with PointsBet. All right. You got it. Yeah. Download the app. Unbuttoned. Free money.
If you've done that, hey, if you've done that, let us know.
Yeah.
You know, because if you haven't done it and you're in an eligible state, we're going to say you're throwing away money. And we don't condone that on
How
the Unbuttoned
Pod. How many
states
are eligible and not eligible at this point? Points, where are we getting at? We got to be getting up there, right?
Pete, do you know, I think they're in like 10 states maybe right now.
How many states have actually legalized gambling at
this
point?
Well, it depends. You know, some may be, you know, legal for some may be, you know.
I know.
You got to get, I don't know.
I know. Some states are on it and some aren't.
I tried to talk like I knew there for a second, but I really
have no
idea.
You did. You act like you're like, some states got to get on it. Some states don't got to get on it.
I was like, these words are not helping anyone right now. I'm just saying them.
But that was a good job by you trying to be like NBC sportscaster.
Yeah, I was like, talking about? I was like, I don't know any of this stuff. All right, so go get on that. And if you've done it, let us know.
Yeah, I'd like to know too.
And then let us know what you're doing with $125 in free bets.
Right.
And then see if we can win some games there.
Yep.
Maybe Chris had a very good week this week, so hopefully you listened to him.
Yep.
The defense is awesome for the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, you got Gregory back. You got Lawrence,
DeMarcus Lawrence back right.
too. I mean,
it's as healthy as they've been all year. On
looks
defense.
Awesome,
right?
And so you're like, wow, this is great because the Cowboys, we know they have a great offense.
Yeah.
What? Wait a second. Hold on.
Yeah.
What's happening to the offense?
Right.
And like specifically, what's happening to Dak Prescott? Because I don't know if he isn't healthy. There's some chatter out of beat reporters that cover the team that there's something going on here with Dak. He doesn't look right. And the offense doesn't look right.
No.
And are you concerned?
I'm not, you know, I don't want to say it. I mean, to a degree. I'm not concerned in the fact of where I go, oh, man, I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. That's not a question for me. But
to be that Super Bowl team, you were a few weeks ago.
Exactly
you're like,
they
can win the Super Bowl.
Exactly right. They're not the well-oiled machine I would have thought maybe right after, you know, they beat the Patriots and then beat the Vikings without Dak Prescott, right, where I just went, damn. I mean, they're just... Right, it's kind of gone downhill ever since. Dak Prescott's certainly not been the same. I would think there is something still nagging him, bothering him. He's missed way too many throws, even yesterday, where I just go, man, this isn't the guy that I saw before the injury who couldn't do no wrong, was as hot as anybody in football, was on the way to being in the MVP discussion, really, for how explosive and unstoppable the offense was. You know, I think there's two things that jump out to me. Him being a little off and... I think I've said this maybe last week or the week before. Their run game not quite as dominant, right? And they've had some injuries in the offensive side of the ball too, so I don't want to downplay that. That's a real thing. They're player-centric in Dallas. They've acquired a bunch of Jimmys and Joes who are just absolute freaks of nature, so they're a little dependent on that. But, you know, I think early in the year, for the most part, they were able to run the ball well enough all the time that teams had to play – oh, we gotta respect that to a degree. We gotta slow that down. And that, you know, healthy receivers led to just a fireworks show in the pass game. They could do whatever they want. But now the run game has slowed down, in my opinion. Yeah, I think
Pollard hurt.
Yeah, Pollard
and Zeke's
been banged
out of the game,
up.
Yeah.
Right. He's been dealing with a knee issue. He looked better yesterday. But I don't think it's the kind of run game where teams are sitting there going, oh my gosh, like, we're gonna get killed by this group here today. And now that's put a little bit more pressure on the pass game. Cooper's just getting back healthy. Like we talked about, Dak Prescott is off a little bit. And, you know, when I do watch their passing game, hey, it's good. I don't sit there and go, oh, wow, this is so creative. Look what they're doing here. They're a little bit like, hey, they got all the plays, and they just call them, and they go, he's good, our receivers are good, and it'll work. I don't know if I necessarily look at it and go, oh, well, it's really tied well together, right? They had a rhyme and a reason for everything and a zig for every zag to keep you on balance. And, oh, wait, it's this run. Oh, no, it's the play action off of it. You know, they don't tie plays together that way in the same fashion. And to me, as the great offensive coordinators in football, and to me, that's where they've dropped off a little bit. It didn't matter the first 5 or 6 weeks. Because they ran the ball so well, too, to where they just got looks to where it was like, what pass play did you call? Oh, okay, he's open. Woo, yeah. Because they were really rolling in every aspect. But now because the run game slowed down a little bit, and I think, again, we're in the time of the year where teams got a good feel for what you like to do in the pass game, that, yeah, they're not able to just be that well-oiled machine that they were, you know, first 5-6 weeks of the year.
Yeah, Paul Good tweeted us. He lives over in the UK, and he said that we seem to have the Cowboys rammed down our throats here in the UK a lot.
Well, welcome to America. I mean, so do we. We do, too. It's America's team, and it's, you can never turn on a TV where whatever talk show it is, the Cowboys are going to get you know, some amount of time. But I think at the end of the day, still, you know, they're pretty well coached on both sides of the ball, right? They had control of that game yesterday.
They did.
I don't know what the hell they were doing on the interception. Dak, the last interception. I mean, both of his interceptions were bad yesterday.
He could have had a couple more, too.
He probably could have had a couple more. Exactly right. Had some that were kind of bumping around and bobbling around. They dropped one or two. But that last one was really bad, and one where you just don't expect him to make that mistake. Understand the game a little bit. You're up 27-14 at that point. The other team's quarterback is hurt. Don't give them any, you know, advantage or momentum here. And so they run a bootleg to the right. There's a guy, you know, 55, Holcomb, right? That's him, sitting there in the hole. And I don't know why, but the tight end also pulled up where I'd never seen that, where the tight end pulls up on a drag route or a crossing route on a bootleg. He always has to run. He slows down. Dak still tried to throw him the ball, And, of course, that became a disaster, and all of a sudden we were in a football game there and got a little scary for a minute.
But they got the win.
Yep.
And they've probably won the NFC East.
The defense was absolutely overwhelming early, right?
It's a great unit.
That's where we got to make sure we paint that picture.
I think we did.
Okay, we did.
I thought Washington...
They whooped that ass early on.
I thought this game, I was like, all right, well, there goes Washington's hopes. And they are gone for a division title, which I guess we're kind of there before this game, if they had won this game for sure. But they're still the seventh seed in the NFC. That's crazy. I mean, you can't write them. I don't know about Heinicke, what's going on with the knee.
Yeah.
Kyle Allen had to come in. That would change things.
He took some big hits, Heinicke, for sure. But yeah, I mean,
they're still in it.
The 6-7 with Minnesota, Philadelphia, Atlanta, and New Orleans, that's going to be an interesting race there down the stretch.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know who's better out of that group, but San Francisco sitting pretty. And you heard me say this last night. I think the one team that really benefited from yesterday, they didn't even play, was the Rams. The way it shook out for the Rams yesterday, now sitting at 8-4, I mean, I know it's not done yet, but man, you know, you've given them some leeway if they lost another game or two to where you can almost go, yeah, they're going to be in the playoffs almost no matter what, unless they just have a total meltdown over the last month here.
Yeah, if they can get a win tonight.
Yeah, if they get a win tonight, you can almost assure them in the playoffs.
We're going to get into Damn Okay, but we want to let you know that we are supported by Under Armour. Just a reminder here. And just like us, Under Armour wants to give you an edge, Chris.
Yes, they do. And they are focused on performing better and taking their game to the next level, just like me and Ahmed.
Yeah, we go from here right up to here.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
next
one more level up.
Ding.
Sometimes two levels.
Yeah.
We'd like to go two
ding,
levels
ding.
Up. Yeah, ding, ding.
Yeah.
Double ding.
Right.
Everything from running shoes that propel you forward to hoop shoes that give you that insane grip. They even make hoodies that reflect energy.
Yes, they do. Yeah. And we're not just about the end result, winning or glory.
Under Armour is about hard work, the dedication, the cycle of training, competing, and recovering.
We give you advantages but not shortcuts.
The only way is through.
Wow.
We've done it.
Wow.
We've done it.
I stepped on your line one there.
No,
A-.
But it was like practice for the last line.
It was.
It was like we were in unison with Under Armour earlier, which set us up for a good ending.
Yeah, I know. That one's like a, you know, it's a weird one. It's a short sentence, so I always want to read into the second one there.
You're like, I've earned another sentence here, right? Should I just do
look
two?
Look how good did I read there.
All right, let's do it. Damn Okay, presented by Under Armour.
Damn, I'm okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, yes.
I'm okay.
The legal gambolizing.
Oh, baby. I am Chris Sims. I'm okay. Damn. Okay.
Let's give our damn okay to Aaron Rodgers, your boy. Even with bad toe or anything, which he says got worse after the game.
Yeah,
so we'll keep our eye on that toe.
Yeah.
Rodgers improves to 23-5 versus Chicago. He still owns the Bears. And now he has 7 games versus Chicago with 4 or more touchdown passes and 0 interceptions.
That's
the most
amazing
of any opponent for him. The Bears, by the way, their quarterbacks, since at least 1950, have only 8 such games versus anyone.
It's amazing.
And Rodgers has 7
against them
versus Chicago.
That is amazing.
So he does own them.
It's kind of ownership.
It is very true. And the score, you go, it's a blowout game. First half, highly entertaining.
Highly.
Justin Fields, give him some props.
Definitely.
He was making big plays for Chicago and for Green Bay with a pick 6.
Right,
He was exciting, fun to watch,
it
just
was.
Coming back from that rib injury. So I think a lot of good things. If you're a Chicago fan, you're like, okay, that was actually kind of entertaining first half.
Right.
And then if you're a Green Bay fan, you're like, all right, well, we eventually owned the team that we own.
Yeah.
So I think both fan bases walk away feeling like, okay,
hey,
it's okay.
they got some things about their team in Chicago they should be excited about regardless. You know, they're not the healthiest on defense, but got a lot of staples in place for the future to go, okay, I like it. Got a few young offensive linemen. Of course, got a quarterback who's going to be a star. Mooney Robinson, you know, Jakeem Grant, right? Montgomery's a good running back. I'd like to see them add another running back to the mix to a degree. Defensively, you still got Roquan Smith. Khalil Mack will be back. You know, Johnson's a really good corner, as you could see last night, and some of the issues he gave Devontae Adams. So, yeah, you should be excited about the Bears. I mean, you shouldn't have expected that you were just going and win that game. It was awesome that they were up 24-14 at one point. You know, early on in the football game, I mean, I know we were sitting there watching it together. I mean, Green Bay was a little, I think, asleep at the wheel, thinking, hey, it's Chicago. We own them. We're going to beat them. Offensively, couldn't do anything. You know, you saw Rodgers holding the ball. Didn't look like anybody was open downfield and all the camera angles we had here at NBC. They got a little pressure on them. They did that. And they had some good game plan plays to kind of expose the Green Bay defense a little bit. And, yeah, really jumped out on them. Interception, like you said, was a big play for Green Bay. As far as, wait, it was 10-7. The Packers kind of put an ugly touchdown together. They threw a fourth down pass to Lazard, right, to make it 10-7. But you're going, oh, the Bears still kind of have the momentum. I like the way things are looking. Rasul Douglas gets the interception, and you go, oh, crap, there it goes. It's over.
But it wasn't.
It wasn't over. Great answer by Fields, right? I think you and I were really impressed by that.
Yep.
He hits who was that? He hit Demir Bird, right?
54-yard touchdown.
Right, and I think you and I looked at each other and like, man, what an answer. Young kid, Lambeau Field, Sunday Night Football. He didn't even blink.
Yep.
He gets that, and there's 17-14.
Yeah, and then you get the 97-yard punt return by Jakeem Grant here.
Right.
And there's a question that we got from Chris Voteman.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, we need to give some more love to special teams play.
Mm.
It's one-third of the game, and the Packers will F up their season in the playoffs. You're not winning against elite teams with the current special teams. Luckily, the Bears suck. So he wanted us to give credit to the special teams, Chris. And then he goes, and also slam the Packers special teams unit for being so bad.
Yeah.
I think they were I think Matt LaFleur was asked about special teams. Like, are you going to fire your special teams coach? And he was like, no, we're not doing that. But what do you make of the fact that if there's a weakness on the Packers, maybe part of it is special teams?
Yeah, well, we overlooked that a lot. I will say that. You know, there's games where, you know, again, we don't really probably even emphasize when teams kind of mess up that department enough. Like, hey, we just talked about the Bengals. They messed up the game.
That's
special
true.
Teams, right? You know, there's two or three games every week where you kind of look at it that way. But, you know, I'm trying to think throughout the year, special teams. They've had the
Crosby's,
field goal misses,
yeah,
right?
Crosby's had some issues.
I'm trying to think if there was any. I do think they had a game where they dropped a punt against the Rams. They muffed a punt there. The Rams also muffed a punt,
that's
so
right.
They kind of made up for it. And I'm trying to think if there was anything else there that I'm missing. That happened
like
here.
More egregious than other teams.
But it's a point that he's right in the fact that we probably need to keep track of it a little bit more.
But that was the first punt return for a touchdown this year. That surprised both of us.
Insane.
Remember, it was in the highlight sheet. And you go, is that true?
You said
it.
And
I was like, it doesn't seem true, but it's written here on this sheet.
It's crazy.
So
the first one of the
our
year.
NBC research department
caught
is undefeated.
The ball inside the 5-yard line.
Which you're not supposed to do.
Runs to the right.
Yep.
Green Bay loses contain, and all of a sudden you're going, oh my gosh. I mean, You're going, wait, it was 14-10 Green Bay.
Uh-huh.
Chicago answers 17-14. Green Bay goes 3-and-out. They return the punt. And you're going, maybe this is the night it's going to be. maybe Chicago's got them. But then, oh, Aaron Rodgers.
Yep. Comes back, and he slices and dices. And you say he does as good a job as anyone feeling out the game.
Yes.
Like, what do I need to do? Oh, I need to score 45. I'll score 45.
Yeah.
So that's what he did. I think the bigger concern, though, is what's going on with that toe.
Yeah.
Because he said it was worse.
Right.
He's played through it. Maybe he'll continue to play through it.
He will.
I asked you if he should take a game or two off to get it healthy, and you say that's really not an option for them.
No, it's not an option for them. You know, first off, they want that number one seed, you know, to have that week off. And then, of course, you know, I know this from talking to people up there. I think I've told you this a little bit, you know, off air and things. They have real belief in themselves at home. And I know they lost in the NFC Championship game last year to the Buccaneers and everything like that. I get it. I mean, again, the game was really close. That was a special Bucs team, there's no doubt, right? But, you know, yeah, history tells us Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay in January is very tough to beat. It's a tough stadium. There is a home field advantage. There's a mystique about it. The weather's almost always at least very cold. Rodgers has an arm like an Allen or a Brady in New England. It just doesn't matter. So he's going to feel like he's got the advantage over just about every quarterback that comes into town not named Tom Brady. He's going to go, okay, it doesn't matter. And I think they're going to continue to play for that. And, you know, I've had a broken pinky toe before.
Okay.
Annoying as hell, bothers you, but it won't affect you really physically, other than you're just going, oh, man. I mean, the play gets done. You go, God, man, that fucking thing hurts. Gosh, damn. But you can play through it.
Is that what it is, his pinky toe?
It's his pinky toe or the next toe in, I believe, right? It's the pinky.
Pinky toe.
So,
do you call it a pinky toe?
I think you do.
Is it a pinky toe?
I call it a pinky toe. I've never known any different.
Pete, do you call it a pinky toe?
You do.
Okay.
Does.
Maybe
okay.
What do you call it?
I don't know. I thought the pinky was more the hand.
Well,
I didn't know you had a pinky on your foot too.
Yeah, well,
I guess I do.
You do.
Okay.
Yeah.
You do.
I do.
Pete does.
Apparently you don't. You have four middle fingers and a big toe.
I have a small toe. My small toe.
But Rodgers, I want to go on your point. And I know I've said it before, but He, to me, has the greatest feel in football for going, wait, our defense is good and they're not very good. I'm just going to be conservative and I'll get first downs and we'll win the game 24-10. Okay, so what? And then he's just got a great feel of, oh, shit, it's 24-14. Doesn't look like it's our night. All right, hold on. Let me put on the cape. Here I come. And then he just has a great feel to go, okay, now I'm going to push the envelope and start making some fucking insane Aaron Rodgers throws. And that, to me, is – that's what a great quarterback can do. The night your team's asleep a little bit, not doing well, okay, messing some things up, the great quarterback can go, wait, guys – you know, relax, calm the fuck down. I got this. I'll get us back in. You guys get your shit together. And then they started to put it together in the second half. But, yeah, between that, going down four plays, 75-yard drive before the half, make it 24-21, and then they Belichicked them because they got the ball in the third quarter, and he went down on a great drive there, score a touchdown, right? They get the strip sack fumble on Justin Fields the next drive, and it was night-night Chicago, yeah. And Aaron Rodgers still owns you.
Yeah, the Bears basically went three and out, I think, their first four possessions, except they fumbled on the first possession, so yeah, it was like two and out.
Right.
So they really had a hard time in the second half. Green Bay gets the win. It, you know, if Aaron can't go, maybe Kurt Benkert can play. So he played in this game because Jordan Love was unavailable. COVID protocols for Jordan?
Yeah,
is that what it was?
So. Yes, yes.
Benkert has bounced around the NFL since 2018, active for the first time ever, and got to take in the final kneel downs. I think we have a tweet. And he tweeted out, Kurt
so
Benkert,
cool. Well done,
a
Kurt
dirty
Benkert.
Knee. He's got like white paint on it. It must have been at midfield, I guess.
Who made you all creative like this?
And so he went in the game and took the final kneel down.
Battle scars.
Really cool. And we think, we have a suspicion that maybe Aaron Rodgers orchestrated that.
Yeah, I would think so. Rodgers is the type of guy that'd be like, hey, go get your name in the game book. Go take the snap here. I'm going to, you know, put my hair in a ponytail and get ready for, you know, my post-game press conference with Catherine Tappan. But, yeah, I would bet. Because I thought it was weird. I will say, I was sitting there watching. I was going, man, Rodgers didn't even just go out and take the kneel. Like, the game's right. Over. But there probably was some, you know, thought-out reason there by Aaron Rodgers.
Damn okay to Kurt Benkert for taking a knee.
Way
and getting
go, Kurt.
Dirty knee after the game. Damn okay to another quarterback, Patrick Mahomes. They beat the Raiders. He and the Chiefs 48-9. This was a blowout. I think we have Mahomes versus the Raiders and then versus everyone else. So in the two games versus the Raiders since week five, 2-0, 332 yards per game. Everyone else, 251 yards per game. And look at the TDs to interception ratio.
Right.
Versus the other seven games against the NFL. Six TDs, eight interceptions versus the Raiders, 7-0. Bad news for the Chiefs. Probably not going to play the Raiders in the playoffs.
No, you're right.
Good news is they did play them on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, the Raiders classify as that team, you know, that annoys me, right? You know me. This is what we do. We do this and we execute it. We don't mess up.
Great. In what respect?
Well, they're very simplistic. It's Seattle cover three or it's man-to-man coverage.
So what do you make of this, though? Pete dug into some numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The Raiders used two deep safeties on 36% of Mahomes' dropbacks in Week 10,
right,
up to that to 70% this week.
Right, so they probably played a little more quarters this week. That'll be interesting to see. I'm going to be interested to see that. Yeah, hey, you know, the Seattle cover three, they obviously had answers for it the first game around, so this is how they tried to change it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. I thought it was efficient as Mahomes was the whole year. I mean, that's for sure. You know, they protected well. He stood in the pocket. Seemed like he threw the ball pretty well throughout the day. You know, again, I'll be interested to see what those two safety defenses were.
Sure.
I really will, and I'll check that out for sure. You know, even when the Raiders play a single safety defense, right, and they play cover three, it's not an aggressive cover three where that safety comes down to, like, linebacker level always. If you watch what Gus Bradley used to do with the Chargers, even when they would play a cover three, the safety would just rotate a little bit down. He wouldn't get so far down there that you're going to be able to run behind him and do that. But I will be interested to see that. The story of this game, Mahomes being efficient, great. The story of the game is the defense. Like the Cowboys against Washington, like the Bucs did to Buffalo early in the first half, this was even to a greater extent of they were – overwhelmed, physically whooped the crap out of the Raiders offense. I mean, from the get-go, first play, strip, fumble, touchdown of the game. And then Derek Carr was under duress throughout. They dropped some footballs and then just made some stupid turnovers as the game went on. But the defense, again, was really the story in Kansas City. We always want to talk about Mahomes and company, but hey, 7-2 since week 5. You know, it's not because of the offense. It's
10 points per game. They're giving only 10 points per game they're giving up in the last 6 weeks.
It's in your face. It's physical. It's got a great splash of creativity. Like I've talked about, I think they've got the right personnel in the right spots now, finally. You know, they're not messing defensive calls up like they were early in the year. It was a lot of bus coverages and things of that nature, and none of that's happening, and they just absolutely kicked the crap out of the Raiders.
Yeah, Mike Hughes, 9 tackles, a couple forced fumbles, had that fumble return for a touchdown, so give him a shout-out. One shout-out to a Raider, and this comes from Tripod 2X, damn okay Hunter Renfro. Just Hunter Renfro, he says. The Raiders don't deserve to be mentioned, but how is this guy who looks like he could be the water boy always open?
Yeah. They have a great offense that lends itself to the slot receiver a lot. You know, it's Gruden. Gruden had 9 million ways to throw this ball 7 yards, 6 yards. I wish he would have had more ways to throw the ball 20 and 30 yards. But that's bread and butter for him. And, again, don't judge books by their cover. I mean, that's all I could say. That position right there, you don't need to be, like, freaky in all areas. There's only one area you got to be freaky in. You got to be quick and fast twitch. As long as you're able to move in short areas and be really explosive that way, I'm going to go this way, and then you go back out that way. That's what their life is, right? I'm going to fake the 5-yard in route and then run out. And there's a guy that's covering him, and, of course, he's on an island, and it's going to be impossible to cover a guy like that, let alone he has the smarts to understand coverages and do that. He did have a fumble during the game, right, where somebody punched the ball out of him.
Jeez, we're trying to, like, nice to him here.
They all had fumbles. I mean, the tight end dropped the ball, got intercepted by Derek Carr. But that's, you know, again, when you get your ass whooped 41-10 the first time, I would say don't go jump on the other team's logo.
Yeah.
Right?
Let's
play like a competitive game first and then see after the game or next time you play them.
Yeah.
But you can't get your ass whooped and then go, we're going to come in here like we're the big bad bullies today.
Yeah.
You know,
they made two
mistakes the last two times they've gone to Kansas City. Time before that, they upset them last year. Remember early in the year?
Took the bus all around the
stadium. Right, right. I mean, that's it. From that, Kansas City's been pissed off at the Raiders ever since then. Ever since.
Well, it showed.
And it's not going to stop. It's not. They're going to remember that. It was, you know, a low-blow move as far as Andy Reid of the Chiefs are concerned.
So the Chiefs get the last laugh, beating the Raiders there. Justin Herbert gets the last laugh against the New York Giants. Justin Herbert is amazing. He is in that upper echelon of quarterbacks right now, just like Patrick Mahomes.
Yes, he is.
Let's take a look at the passing chart versus the Giants here, Kristen, if you have that. Because the touchdown that he threw to Jared Guyton at the end of the first half is literally off the chart. You can't even. Next Gen Stats has to make a new graphic to be able to chart that throw from Herbert.
That is, he's. I mean, him, Mahomes, Rodgers, Josh Allen. You know who else am I missing? I mean, there's throwing the ball 70 yards in the air. I don't think is really that hard for them.
So Jack F says, is Justin Herbert the best deep thrower in the NFL right now?
Yes, he is. He's not only in the discussion for the best thrower, period, in the NFL. Yeah,
he is the best deep ball thrower.
Because even his bad throws are still in a spot where it's like, okay, it's 50-50, and this guy can still go get it. That's what he did a little bit in the Cincinnati game last week, right?
Yeah.
You know, I know you weren't here for the Wednesday What the Fuck Happened podcast, but we basically broke down 3 plays where they took a shot, and he just went, wait, this is a guy that's not as good as my guy. I'm going to put it up there and let him go get it. This play here yesterday, the deep one to it was Guyton, right? I mean, he scrambles to the right a little bit, realizes, whoa, I got a guy running down the middle of the field between 2 split safeties and let it fly. I hope they continue to do that. I hope he continues to do that. They have the type of guys that can go up and catch those footballs. And like you've heard me say before, you know, when they do that, and he's aggressive, and they call a few shots, it makes everything else on their offense really good. But this game here, it was this. Eckler and the run game were really good early on. And then, you know, I don't know whether it's things stayed the same on the Giants' defensive side or if they started to play different defenses. But after those first 2 drives, then it became Justin Herbert kind of just lighting them up in the pass game and seemed like they had their way that way. And, of course, we know the Giants' offense is not capable of a whole lot right now.
Well, hold on. Eli Penny, the touchdown catch was their first touchdown by a running back or a wide receiver since October. So there you go. They're back.
That's embarrassing. That's embarrassing.
Okay.
It really is. I mean, there's too much talent on that receiving core for that to be the case. Now, again, I'll go back to their biggest issue is they can't even a lot of times wait to throw the ball down the field because they can't protect long enough to do it. And that's one of their biggest issues. It affects everything about their football game. So they're so undermanned in that department that it affects all these other areas that, you know, become crazy stats as we go along here.
Giants are not going to make the playoffs. The Chargers right now, the 5 seed at 8-5. They're ahead of 5 other 7-6 teams. One of those 7-6 teams, the Denver Broncos. As you take a look at the AFC playoff picture there, you got the Denver Broncos at 7-6. They're in the hunt right now. They get the win over the Detroit Lions in a game that really was focused around Demaryius Thomas. You saw all the tributes before the game.
Yeah, that was cool.
Denver went out there with 10 men on the field, took the delay of game.
Right.
Lions declined that penalty. And you saw after every big play, basically, there was an 88 on the field. The Denver Bronco players would go over there, pay tribute to Demaryius Thomas, who tragically died at the age of 33 just a few days ago.
Man.
Did you meet him ever? Or
I met him before, just in passing. I mean, nothing
seems like
to where
everyone says so many positive things about him.
I mean, everybody seems to say he's the nicest guy in the world, you know, and again, we never saw anything other than that. He always held himself to a very professional level on the field, and really there was never anything about him off the field. You know, had one of those faces that, you know, again, was just like, hey, he looks like a nice guy. Like, it's just, you know, one of those, I don't know how you explain those.
He enjoyed life, he enjoyed football.
Sweet smile, sweet face, where you just looked at him, and man, it looks like he's a nice guy, right? And I know that can be wrong sometimes, but I don't think it was wrong in this case. And other thing, I don't want to be under-talked about here for the person he was and all that. Man, was he a good player. I mean, man, was he a good player. He is one of the best players of the 2010s, for sure, at the wide receiver position. I mean, special. You know, size, real speed to catch screens or slants and go to the house or bombs down the field. You know, had it all, really did.
I mean, he was Peyton's main man.
Peyton's main man when he got there, no doubt. Yeah. I mean, he was a mismatch nightmare type of guy. He really was. And great career. It's a shame it all came to an end too short.
Paid tribute to him during the game, before the game, and then the Broncos paying tribute by just dominating the Detroit Lions in this game, who were undermanned. They had, I think, 18 players who were affected either by COVID or the flu, so a separate thing that was going through the team. And so they were undermanned in the game. But I think the positive for the Denver Broncos here is that you got a good 1-2 punch with Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams. They used them both, and I feel like that's going to be, if they're going to get to the playoffs and make any sort of a run, it's going to be offensively, those guys.
Yeah, it is. And hey, listen, the run game is what it is all about there. You know, again, the pass game doesn't lend itself to a lot of big plays. Again, I don't think it's in Teddy Bridgewater's nature to be aggressive and do that. And, you know, they got a pretty good O-line, and those two running backs are really good. And they were rolling early on. Detroit had no answer for that. But even saying all of that, like, Detroit hung around. They hung around. And there we go. We're going into the third quarter, and it's 17-10. I mean, it's 17-10. And what happened first? We had the
Detroit fumbled their second
Detroit
play.
Detroit fumbled
the second
play, right? He fumbles first, right? So now they go down 24-10.
Yep.
And on the very next drive, they get a 4th-and-2 at the 33.
Oh, boy, here we go again.
And you know.
Oh, jeez, here we go again.
4th-and-2 at the 33.
Their own 33.
Right? And, like, even though we talked about the offense did good the first two drives and they put up points, they'd kind of settled in. It wasn't to the point where you're like, oh, man, they're never going to be able to stop Denver. It's 24-10, 4th-and-2, own 31. They get stopped. Denver scores a few plays later. Game's over. I mean, it's over. It's 31-10. You have Jared Goff and you're the Lions. It's over. I'm sorry. And that, to me, was a big mistake there. Just a little too over-aggressive, and I know, you know, you and me are in different spots about that one, but I don't agree with that one. I don't.
Yep. Lions go down. Maybe they were all getting tired. They were all getting tired because they had so few players to play out there. So Broncos get the win. They're in the playoff mix for sure. The Saints still in the playoff mix. They get the win over the Jets. 30-9 was the final score. Our damn okay goes to Alvin Kamara.
Of course.
Because he returns in that losing streak magically goes away for New Orleans, because he might be the most important non-quarterback to his team. We put, you know, Derrick Henry in that conversation.
Right.
We put Jonathan Taylor in that conversation.
Debo.
And with Taysom Hill at quarterback, you can do some different things. And I'm really excited to see this offense moving forward.
Yeah.
Like, this is a fun offense to see because it's different than other offenses when you have a quarterback like Taysom Hill, who is a different kind of running quarterback.
Yeah.
Than
power,
the other running,
yeah, exactly. Running quarterback, right.
It's like more of the Cam Newton mold,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What do you think they can do here? Because Thomas S. Penna says, damn okay for Taysom Hill. He receives a lot of hate from people saying he isn't a quarterback. However, even with an injured finger, almost no weapons, he went 15 to 21 for 175 yards and 73 rushing yards.
Yeah, listen, I'm like, I got nothing to say that I'm not a believer in Taysom Hill yet.
You are a believer.
I'm a believer.
You're a noted believer.
Right? There's no, what is there, like, everyone's holding last week against the Cowboys. The guy broke his finger in the first quarter. And everybody's, oh, look, he's not accurate. They're going to judge him on that. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to start judging your guy, your quarterbacks on some crazy shit now. Let's see what happens. You know, he's got talent. He does. And he can be accurate. We saw that last year. With high degree of difficulty of throws, not Charlie check down 4-yard throws. So, again, that was what everybody liked about him in the offense in New Orleans last year. They went, whoa, the field gets stretched as compared to Drew Brees, who had lost arm strength, you know, late in his career. I mean, that's what everybody was liking. And he was still throwing for over 72% last year. But, you know, don't even get me started. You know where I want to go with this. Either way, I share your excitement, okay? Because they have a formula with Hill and Kamara that I think can make them a pain in the ass as we go forward here. You know, I don't know if they can get in the playoffs. You know, I know they have, like, the Bucs coming up this week, which is certainly going to be, you know, a tough match, but we know that they match up well with them. Dolphins, Panthers, Falcons after that, they can certainly win those three games. You know, Dolphins are playing good football. It's going to be fun to see. But they can win those three. Their defense is still really good, and with the Kamara, their offensive line, and then Taysom Hill's ability to run, I do think Sean Payton, to your point, is going to be able to pose some schematical problems with those two off the run game. And then because of lack of receivers and things like that, it'll help the pass game. It will, that little combination. So I'm not counting them out yet either. I'm not. You know, Sean Payton's too good of a coach. Dennis Allen's too good on the defensive side of the ball. If they somehow pulled off a upset this weekend against Tampa Bay,
yeah.
Wow, I'd sit here and go, whoa, they're going to get in the playoffs then. But even if they lose this week, I could certainly see them winning the three games at the end of the year or two to get in.
Yeah, they're 6-7, and a 6-7 Washington team currently is in the playoffs right now in the NFC.
So there you go.
Not out of it by any means.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again! Gold for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. This summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
One question about the Jets. Lou from Astoria. Is Wilson still in your mind a franchise quarterback, or are the Jets just a lousy team?
Oh, Lou, come on. We got to stop making this all about the quarterback. Zach Wilson made some throws yesterday that I thought were off the charts good. They dropped, I want to say, 5 passes in the first half, at least something in that nature. I mean, again, they hung around against a really good Saints defense. A Saints defense that Tom Brady can't beat. Okay, let's remember what we're talking about here. He beat him once in the playoffs, and he got a little fortunate that way. This Saints D is real. You know, where are they statistically in football right now? Let me look at this. The Saints defense, they're 12th in football right now, right? It's still one of the best run-stopping defenses in football, and they only let up 21 points a game. They're good. You know, they're a top 10-ish defense in almost all areas. So, and then, yeah, your offense is not that great. It's not. And your defense is nothing special either. I still am a believer in where the Jets are going. I am. I think there's a lot of pieces that are there. You know, again, they've been ravaged by injuries this year, as bad as anybody in football. Wilson's physical ability, Lou, that's all we got to look at. He's not going to be Tom Brady in year 12 yet, and not with this group and everything like that. I mean, he's thrown to Braxton Berrios as his main receiver. Nobody even wants Braxton Berrios in football. He's their main target. And I don't mean that to be disrespectful. I'm just trying to make a point. You know what I'm trying to say here. But, yes, I like what I see from Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson still, out of all these quarterbacks, has made more wow throws than any of the other rookie quarterbacks. He has. And they ask him to make more wow throws than any of the other rookie quarterbacks. No, he hasn't played as clean as Mac Jones. I get that. I know he hasn't made as great scrambles as a Justin Fields. But from throwing in the pocket, to me, Zach Wilson has made more wow moments. And I go, ooh. And I know he's missed some, too. But that stuff is going to be – he'll fix that. I don't worry about that. I saw enough evidence in college to go, he'll hit that all day long. Things are uncomfortable. He's a young guy. They're not a great team. And it leads to some crazy moments.
And to get Chris to say something bad about Zach Wilson, it would be like getting him to say something bad about a little Philip Sims.
But
like
I said bad when he played like shit. When he was over in London and Atlanta and he missed
balls. There are some throws that even he said in this game that were a little off target for him.
He missed a few. Yeah, he tries to be a little too perfect at times. What I've said on the podcast, I think I said this last week, is he gets himself in trouble when he tries to place the ball.
Sure.
Just throw the ball through the fucking target.
It's a learning year for him.
It is a learning year.
He's learning, but the talent, you've seen it enough times to know that it's there.
Right.
It's just got to be refined. Right. Time to give me the headlines presented by Hyundai. Got three more games left. We'll start with the Titans shutout of the Jags, 20-0. Your headline in this game is?
Urban Retreat.
Oh. They're leaving the city of Jackson. He may be leaving the city of Jacksonville.
Yes, he might be. You're right. I don't know where that's going to go.
I think I know. How can they recover from
this? I think most people in the NFL, in the know, in league circles, tend to have your thought. You know, again, I don't think they know, but they tend to think that this is going to be a one-and-done thing with Urban Meyer. It's been ugly. You know, the reports you heard over the weekend, right, about – you know, the way he talks to coaches and their leaks and whatever else. I'm pretty sure I was saying these things in week three of the NFL season. This has been going on all year long. And, yeah, like you want to say to Urban Meyer, yeah, people are going to leak things when you treat them like shit always.
When you call them losers, they may tell people that you're calling
them losers. In front
of
the team, in front of the coaching staff. I've heard these stories from early on in the year. That's what he does. Talks to coaches, I don't know why I hired you. You're a loser. Or you're not good. I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, that's just not the way the NFL works. Nor is it going to help the rest of your football team when they see your head coach demeaning their position coach. They're all going to look at the head coach and go, man, he's an asshole for doing that. And then they're also going to question the coach now, who he just called a loser. And they go, is he a loser? I don't know. It serves no positive reinforcement for your football team there. But ugly game. Titans played D. They didn't take many chances on the offensive side of the ball. I don't think they really care. To me, the Titans are like the Patriots. They're just going to do what they have to do to win the football game. They don't care if it's 12-10 or 20-0 or whatever. I still think the Titans are one of the best teams in the AFC. I'm not giving up on that. And, yeah, they gave Trevor Lawrence and company some issues. Trevor Lawrence threw the four interceptions.
Yeah.
He could have thrown 7 or 8 yesterday. He had a bunch of others that just went off the chest of Titans football players.
More worried about Trevor Lawrence or Zach Wilson?
You know, I'm not worried about either one. I'm really not. They both missed throws. They should not. And they're both, like, mechanical issues that are very easy to fix. So I don't look at it and go, oh, wow, like, there's something there that I don't like about their throwing. And, you know, they're both in offenses that are not exactly talent all over the field. They're young. But, yeah, I got no concerns with Trevor Lawrence. Okay. I really don't. But they were overmatched yesterday. Tennessee – offensive line legit, defensive line phenomenal. secondary very good too. You know, I'm like I said, a believer in the Tennessee Titans.
We were at one point a believer in the Carolina Panthers, at least that defense, but that has changed now. The Falcons beat the Panthers 29-21. Your headline on this game is?
No Cam Do.
Oh, yeah.
No Cam Do. I mean, well, you know, Panthers' mistakes were huge. I don't know what else to say. And they were both Cam mistakes. You know, I know... you know, the other quarterback that came in.
P.J. Walker,
thank you. He threw a stupid interception, which I don't even know why he was in the game at the end of the half. It's like so they put him in to run the two-minute drill?
It might be that. I think there's some word out of Carolina that maybe Cam hasn't picked up the whole playbook, especially the two-minute part of it.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, they benched him at the end of the first half. Cam started the second half. But then they did go back to P.J. Walker in the second half.
Yeah, man. They went back later in the second half. I know. Well, I mean, hey, 7-7. Carolina had a great first drive, few screens. Cam made a throw or two. They had some quarterback design runs. They go down, score a touchdown. Things look good. I think Atlanta got the ball. They punt it back to Panthers. The Panthers punt the ball back to Atlanta. Atlanta goes down and scores. You got a 7-7 football game. And then there was Carolina driving down the football field again. And Cam throws a ball over the middle, gets interception, pick six, and that really changed the flow of the game altogether. I mean, it certainly put Atlanta in a power spot there, and they ended up ultimately going up 17-7 at a half. But then they fight back. Their defense keeps them in it. Carolina's defense is still, like, legit, and he has the tripped fumble
trying to save the play and ends up turning it over,
and that changed it all. It really did. Listen, I don't know how Atlanta keeps winning these games. I really don't.
It's like they're in the playoff.
They're gritty
six and seven.
Gutsy, right?
They're 6-7 right now. Washington, like we said, in the playoffs at 6-7, so they're in the playoff picture. But I feel like no one really wants Atlanta to be in the playoffs.
Even
their fans are just like, you know what? No. We don't want this.
I respect it. They're well coached on both sides of the ball. Matt Ryan is still really good, and you can't get him off the field on third downs. I mean, to me, that's the thing he does where, yeah, it was, 29 points yesterday, and one of them was a defensive touchdown. But the one thing he will do is he possesses the ball on that side of the ball because he's still a great decision maker. He's still a great thrower of the ball. And his movement in the pocket is always underrated. To where third down, it's third and nine, and you think they got him, and he kind of moves around in the pocket and hits an in-cut for 15 yards. He is the king of that. But, yeah, good for them for winning a football game where I don't even know if they're more talented than Carolina. I just think they got good coaches and they got the better quarterback on the football field, and that led to the 8-point victory.
Yeah, Atlanta's a game ahead of Seattle, who's not out of it yet. Seattle gets a win, their fifth win this year, beating the Texans 33-13. Your headline on this game is...
Penny Lockett. Is that a real thing? Have we figured that out?
We don't know.
I knew it was. A Penny Lockett.
So Pete comes in today before you got in, because Chris, to let you behind the curtain.
I'm always late on Mondays.
A few minutes late
on
Monday.
I'm always late.
And Pete goes, I thought of a headline, maybe Penny Lockett. He goes, but I don't know if that's a real thing. You come in, 30 to 45 minutes later, and maybe it was an hour and a half later, and you go, hey, I think we should do a headline Penny Lockett. And he goes, is that a thing? And you go, I don't know, but it sounds like it should be.
I feel like I've seen it before
is.
Where like
we
people have a lucky penny.
Yeah,
right?
We just saw it. There it is.
There it is.
So that's it. So it was Penny and it was
Lockett.
Tyler Lockett. So they both went off, and it was good to see Penny. I know you have been a longtime supporter of Rashad Penny.
I do like his talent.
He's just been hurt.
Yeah.
Was not hurt in this game, went off, and they got the win.
Yeah, good for him. I mean, and hopefully he could stay healthy. You could see his talent. He's got size and explosive ability. Two long touchdown runs in the football game. Hey, that Seattle offense, it's still not pretty to watch. We know that. This game early on, both quarterbacks played really well. Davis Mills, I think, what did you say he was? 14 for 14 to start last night, right?
Yep.
They kind of moved the ball. Did some positive things there, but ultimately there's just not enough talent on the Texans yet. There's really not. And Russell Wilson and company and just their stubbornness to not go away. They finally got it going and he started making some big plays in the past game. But yeah, it was all the Lockett and Rashad Penny show. Mm-hmm. They made all the big plays for that Seahawks offense.
If they win out, they're a playoff team. I don't know if they're gonna be able to do that. But
let's say, yeah, their schedule went out. Let's just give it a quick look here.
I think we looked at it last week and we were like, probably not going to happen. But
yeah,
hey.
Rams, Bears, okay. Lions, Cardinals.
Well, no.
They could get lucky to where the Cardinals don't have to play anything in week 18.
So then all you got to do is beat the Rams.
If you beat the Rams.
Oh, my gosh. Right. They can still do it.
That would be the upset.
All right.
In L.A., I don't like their chances, but I'm never going to count Seattle out. Seattle's like Baltimore. It's just they're always going to fight and play with incredible intensity, and they're battle-tested, and they understand, for the most part, kind of how to manage a game that way, and that's why they're a hard out always.
And that was Give Me the Headlines presented by Hyundai. And with that loss, the Texans were officially eliminated from the playoffs. And so for the first time this year, for the first time in 2021, because I don't know if we did it at the end of last year. Maybe we did. It is time. Oh, we did.
Yeah.
Okay. So for the second time in 2021, we fire up Requiem for a Team. We put to rest the teams that have been eliminated, and it's four teams: the Texans, Jaguars, Jets, and Lions. So, Kristen, do we have the music? Do we still have that? The music's not working. That's okay. We don't need it. So if you're at home right now.
You didn't write a song? You can't hum to something?
It's like beatboxing. You have to hum and do the poem at the same time.
I'm not helping you.
I'm not that good. All right. So here we go. The Houston Texans. You ready for it?
Yep.
Here lie the Houston Texans. We knew this year'd be a wreck. David Culley was handed a bad deck. Not all was great, but they can celebrate. Davis Mills with the league's longest neck. One thing. They're at the top of the league.
One thing. We got the quarterback with the longest neck.
That's it. All right, Jacksonville Jaguars. You ready?
Goodbye, Houston.
Here lie the Jacksonville Jaguars. Yeah, goodbye, Houston. Too many times they played from behind, and Trevor at times did look blind. Urban was bad, but I'm not even mad. At least we got to see him grind.
I was waiting for it. Man, you could have added grind in there like three different times. I was like, where is it? Come on. Throw it in there.
Yeah, it just made you wait till the very end.
And, I mean, is Davis Mills' neck longer than Trevor Lawrence? I'm not sure.
It's
a close one.
Or, the only other neck I thought about was Mike Glennon.
Oh, Mike Glennon, right.
I know.
No
but
doubt.
Give him something. Give the Texans. We just buried them. Give him the quarterback with the longest neck. I'm going to give it to him.
All right, fine.
All right, so Texans are buried. Jaguars are buried. All right, how about the Jets? You ready?
Yep.
All right, here lie the New York Jets. Despite their name, it's a team that cannot take flight. Their talent level is still quite light. But do not despair. They have their quarterback heir, and he goes by the name Mike White. There we go. They got the quarterback of the future.
You're funny.
And the final one, my Detroit Lions, final one right now. Here lie the Detroit Lions. Dan Campbell was given the keys, knowing this would not be a breeze. They did get a win, but to my chagrin, they did not bite enough knees. Not enough knees.
You are good.
Bitten throughout the year. So we laid a rest.
Some nibbling, not some
biting.
Some
nibbling.
Yeah.
They got some nibbling, but no biting. So those teams are dead.
Dead.
And they've been buried now.
Yeah.
They're gone.
See you later. We're not talking about you anymore. You're gone. You're off my radar. We're not no more Monday podcast.
So that's the good thing. If your team is eliminated, that's bad, right? But I'm going to make a poem about them the next day.
Yeah, I like it.
So there we go.
I know. You're a good poem writer.
One more game to go. We're not going to bury the Rams or the Cardinals anytime soon. And so that's our last game to talk about. PointsBet gives us the odds for our Monday night football game. And it is, what is it here? It is Cardinals by 2 in what they think is going to be a high-scoring game, 51 over-under.
Yeah.
So you picked Arizona to win this game.
Yeah.
Are you sticking
Arizona
by that?
I am. I don't ever change. I'm going to pick Arizona 24-21. Again, I do think the Rams match up well with Arizona, that they can match up and take some of these weapons away. They have speed on the defensive side of the ball. But I don't trust the Rams right now. To me, the defense is not shown to be dominant, really. They're good. They're not dominant. The offense, I know they looked better last week against the Jacksonville Jaguars, but it was the Jaguars. And again, what I like to tell everybody is don't stop for – I mean, it was 10-7, like more than halfway through the second quarter. It wasn't like they were like, oh, wow, this is over. So I guess that's where I don't trust it. You know, again, like I said, I think there's a lot of things that are very equal here, but one team seems to have the mojo of kind of just – making big plays, showing up at the right moments, and the Rams, they don't right now. So I don't know what to expect. I need to see another game of, like, clean offensive play by the Rams, and I want to see if their defensive line can show up here. To me, that's been one of the more disappointing things in football. Like, you've heard me say Cleveland's too talented to be where they are. The Rams' defensive line is too talented for the lack of chaos they have created for opposing quarterbacks ever since they acquired Von Miller, which is disappointing to me.
I think this is the game where my guy Matt Stafford and the Rams make a statement.
Back.
I think so.
We've seen
some signs.
I'd hope so. It'd be fun. It'd make things interesting in the NFC.
It would,
certainly.
Yeah.
And they have talent to say, well, they should be in the discussion for one of the top teams in the NFC.
Right.
But they lost their way there a little bit. We'll see if they can regain that mojo tonight.
All right. That's it. We've done
hey,
it.
Hey, hey.
You heard the poems.
Yep. Yep, it was. It was awesome.
All right, so we already have positive reviews on
positive
the poems.
Positive reviews from the guy that you want to get a positive review
exactly.
from. Right. I
exactly.
know.
Luckily, we didn't have to bury the Patriots.
No.
We won't have to.
Yeah, he was complimenting him. Right, right. I know. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, don't take my compliment there yet. All right, that's it. We did it.
We did it. That's a pod.
And Kristen, we did it all in an hour and a half, right?
Kind of.
No.
Probably an hour 40.
Hour 40.
Was it
an hour 40?
I'm going to say it was. You can't get you to stop blabbering. You know, it's just a problem on this podcast. Ahmed won't shut the fuck up.
Yeah. That's all right, though.
Yeah, it's all right. You're the man.
One chance is out. We did it. We made it through.
Two shows in 14 hours.
I know. This is what happened. We see a lot of each other.
Yes.
But yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it is good.
We're
now,
still laughing
now
by the end.
Stay away
of
from
it.
Me for the rest of the week, all right? Please. All right, everybody. You know what the deal is. Subscribe, rate, review. Got Chris Sims Unbuttoned. What the Fuck Happened? Wednesday podcast coming up. You know, we're going to have that. I'd like more questions or just, you know, intrigue onto what plays you want me to break down. So please, like, don't be shy. Come on, do that. Had a pretty good week of picking games this week.
Pretty good.
Pretty
good. Picked them all right.
I picked them all right as far as wins and losses versus the spread.
The money line, you picked them all. 11-2 versus the spread.
3-0 in my best bets. Me and Florio have been pretty good with our best bets as of late. We do that on Thursday, the PFTPM Chris Sims Unbuttoned collaboration podcast, if anybody wants to check that out. All right, everybody, be good. Enjoy Monday Night Football. It should be a good one. Please send in the questions. Ahmed Farid, you the man. Chris Sims Unbuttoned, presented by Under Armour. We love you, Under Armour.
Clap it up.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.